You're listening to The Spiritual Bazaar. I'm A, and this is an anonymous podcast by someone on the road to recovery while exploring spiritual paths and the mystery of life. Malosi, Industria, Luth, Energia, Urja, Orca, Damarta, Ki, Chi, Energy.
Is the force and the powerful ally it is.
Inside most people, there's a feeling of being separate. Separated from everything.
And
they're not. They're part of absolutely everyone. And everything.
Everything. I'm part of this tree. Part of Zach barking over fences.
You're telling me that I'm part of some fisherman in Italy, on some ocean I've never even heard of. No, some guy sitting on death row. I'm part of him, too.
You don't believe me.
It's hard to believe that.
The Force?
Now, the Force is what gives the Jedi his power. It's an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together.
Come here, everybody, gather closely. May I use your glasses? Well, let's call it an experiment in energy. Well, everything there is made up of some living energy, okay? See, now all this is kind of a dance or a partnership between the energy coming from me and the energy of the plastic.
Study of a living, active brain would tell us volumes.
All right, so if you were to do this operation, wouldn't it most likely kill me or at least shorten my life?
George, I'm asking you to try and see the larger picture.
Mm-hmm.
To realize what you have to offer to us, the ones you're leaving behind. You could be our greatest teacher, George. I can be your biographer, in a sense. I can present you to the world.
But that's not me. It's just my brain. Do you understand? Look, doctor, you know, I might just have something to say in my last few hours. I just might have something to say. What you're saying is that I have something to teach, and yet you're willing to end me to study my brain under a microscope. Is that all I'm here for?
What else? You're not a scholar.
I'll tell you what I am, okay? I'll tell you what I think I am. I think I'm what everybody can be.
Everyone with a malignant tentacle.
No. That just helped me get here. Okay? I mean, anybody can get here. I'm the possibility, all right? I mean, I think you've got this desperate grasp on the technology and this grasp on science, and you don't have a hand left to grasp what's important.
George,
if I had to choose between a tumor that got me here and some flash of light from an alien craft, I'd choose the tumor, I would, because it's here, within us. What I'm talking about is the human spirit. That's the challenge. That's the voyage. That's the expedition.
Life creates it. Makes it grow. It's energy. Surrounds us and binds us. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. You must feel the force around you. Here, between you, me, the tree, the rock, everywhere.
I wanted to talk about energy today because the spiritual path, whatever that may be, one, requires basic energy. You have to eat. You have to try to feel good. You need energy to work towards developing more energy. But the kind of energy that you want to develop is something that is in line with your spiritual beliefs, or what you think your spiritual beliefs might be. Those clips included Star Wars, Powder, and Phenomena, all great movies. And they all had something in common. That behind the science that is the backbone of modern society is something extremely profound. If you're an atheist, then even then I think you would understand that. I want to read something here, and obviously you'll hear less out of me today than normal, and I'd rather share some things with you. So I'm going to read an excerpt from Einstein. It was written for the New York Times Magazine, and it appeared in the November 9th, 1930 edition. Everything that the human race has done and thought is concerned with the satisfaction of deeply felt needs and the assuagement of pain. One has to keep this constantly in mind if one wishes to understand spiritual movements and their development. Feeling and longing are the motive force behind all human endeavor and human creation. In, however, exalted a guise, the latter may present themselves to us. Now, what are the feelings and the needs that have led men to religious thought and belief in the widest sense of the words? A little consideration will suffice to show us that most varying emotions preside over the birth of religious thought and experience. With primitive man, it is above all fear that evokes religious notions. Fear of hunger, wild beasts, sickness, death. Since at this age of existence, understanding of causal connections is usually poorly developed. The human mind creates illusory beings more or less analogous to itself, on whose wills and actions these fearful happenings depend. Thus, one tries to secure the favor of these beings by carrying out actions and offering sacrifices which, according to the tradition handed down from generation to generation, propitiate them or make them well disposed towards a mortal. In this sense, I'm speaking of a religion of fear. This, though not created, is in an important degree stabilized by the formation of a special priestly caste which sets itself up as a mediator between the people and the beings they fear, and erects a hegemony on this basis. In many cases, a leader or ruler or a privileged class whose position rests on other factors combines priestly functions with its secular authority in order to make the latter more secure. Or the political rulers and the priestly caste make common cause in their own interests. The social impulses are another source of the crystallization of religion. Fathers and mothers and the leaders of larger human communities are mortal and fallible. The desire for guidance, love, and support prompts men to form the social or moral conception of God. This is the God of Providence, who protects, disposes, rewards, and punishes, the God who, according to the limits of the believer's outlook, loves and cherishes the life of the tribe or the human race, or even life itself, the comforter in sorrow and unsatisfied longing, he who preserves the souls of the dead. This is the social or moral conception of God. The Jewish scriptures admirably illustrate the development from the religion of fear to moral religion, a development continued in the New Testament. The religions of all civilized peoples, especially the peoples of the Orient, are primarily moral religions. The development from a religion of fear to moral religion is a great step in people's lives, and yet that primitive religions are based entirely on fear and the religions of civilized peoples purely on morality is a prejudice against which we must be on our guard. The truth is that all religions are a varying blend of both types, with this differentiation, that on the higher levels of social life, the religion of morality predominates. Common to all these types is the anthropomorphic character of their conception of God. In general, only individuals of exceptional endowments and exceptionally high-minded communities rise to any considerable extent above this level. But there is a third stage of religious experience which belongs to all of them, even though it is rarely found in a pure form. I shall call it cosmic religious feeling. It is very difficult to elucidate this feeling to anyone who is entirely without it, especially as there is no anthropomorphic conception of God corresponding to it. The individual feels the futility of human desires and aims and the sublimity and marvelous order which reveal themselves both in nature and in the world of thought. Individual existence impresses him as a sort of prison, and he wants to experience the universe as a single significant whole. The beginnings of cosmic religious feeling already appear at an early stage of development, e.g., in many of the Psalms of David and in some of the prophets. Buddhism, as we have learned especially from the wonderful writings of Schopenhauer, contains a much stronger element of this. The religious geniuses of all ages have been distinguished by this kind of religious feeling, which knows no dogma and no god conceived in man's image, so that there can be no church whose central teachings are based on it. Hence, it is precisely among the heretics of every age that we find men who were filled with this kind of religious feeling, and were in many cases regarded by their contemporaries as atheists, sometimes also as saints. Looked at in this light, men like Democritus, Francis of Assisi, and Spinoza are closely akin to one another. How can cosmic religious feeling be communicated from one person to another, if it can give rise to no definite notion of God and no theology? In my view, it is the most important function of art and science to awaken this feeling and keep it alive in those who are receptive to it. We thus arrive at a conception of the relation of science to religion very different from the usual one. When one views the matter historically, one is inclined to look upon science and religion as irreconcilable antagonists, and for a very obvious reason. The man who is thoroughly convinced of the universal operation of the law of causation cannot for a moment entertain the idea of being who interferes in the course of events, provided, of course, that he takes the hypothesis of causality very seriously. He has no use for the religion of fear, and equally little for social or moral religion. A God who rewards and punishes is inconceivable to him for the simple reason that a man's actions are determined by necessity, external and internal, so that in God's eyes he cannot be responsible any more than an inanimate object is responsible for the motions it undergoes. Science has therefore been charged with undermining morality, but the charge is unjust. A man's ethical behavior should be based effectually on sympathy, education, and social ties and needs. No religious basis is necessary. Man would indeed be in a poor way if he had to be restrained by fear of punishment and hope of reward after death. It is therefore easy to see why the churches have always fought science and persecuted its devotees. On the other hand, I maintain that cosmic religious feeling is the strongest and noblest motive for scientific research. Only those who realize the immense efforts and, above all, the devotion without which pioneer work in theoretical science cannot be achieved are able to grasp the strength of the emotion out of which alone such work, remote as it is from the immediate realities of life, can issue. What a deep conviction of the rationality of the universe, and what a yearning to understand. Were it but a feeble reflection of the mind revealed in this world, Kepler and Newton must have had to enable them to spend years of solitary labor in disentangling the principles of celestial mechanics. Those whose acquaintance with scientific research is derived chiefly from its practical results easily developed a completely false notion of the mentality of the men who, surrounded by a skeptical world, have shown the way to kindred spirits scattered wide through the world and the centuries. Only one who has devoted his life to similar ends can have a vivid realization of what has inspired these men and given them strength to remain true to their purpose in spite of countless failures. It is cosmic religious feelings that give a man such strength. A contemporary has said, not unjustly, that in this materialistic age of ours, the serious scientific workers are the only profoundly religious people. Coming from my perspective, this resonated with me really, really well. I have always flirted with atheism. I've mentioned that before. But I'm always haunted by this sense of a universal life force, whatever that is. But because I do have faith in science and its discoveries and the importance of the role of science in our modern times, I can't simply turn myself to a way of dogma. I can't. I mean, a lot of that dogma was created and written and made into gospel long before science could help to enlighten us. And there are plenty of atheists out there and scientists that don't need a religion to live ethically and to live morally. How is that possible? It's possible because it's built into the human construct, into our mind, into our brain. We don't have to rely on a religious dogma. Now, if you have a religion that you subscribe to and it works for you, great. But I challenge you to look deeper into science and to see what science has to offer. And like Bill Moyers from PBS, I mean, try to be as open-minded as possible and be open-minded to accept that there might be some fallacies within the construct of that religion. But the one thing I think we all can agree on, whether you're dogmatically religious or agnostic or quote-unquote spiritual, is that there is something going on. And Einstein refers to this in his passage from the scientist's point of view. And that is this sort of cosmic oneness. The awe of it. And the more time you spend not watching maybe some, you know, crappy television show that is completely mindless, which is nice once in a while, but spend a little more time seeing what is going on with science right now, being observant, because the majority of the scientists out there are looking for truth. Now, scientific facts alone by themselves may not seem to offer very much for someone who is seeking a spiritual recovery or spiritual path of their own. But that's only if you're scratching the surface. All you have to do is look up at the stars at night, if you can. Or just stare at a leaf for a while. And you can kind of feel it. That awe. And there is a religiosity in some scientists and in atheism that some people use against the atheists because they claim that they are biased. But why would you even feel the need to attack the atheist or the scientist? If you have comfort in your own belief, then let them be. If they're living a morally and, you know, high ethical life, then that's good for them. That works for them. I don't know if you've ever seen episodes of anything with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Now, on the one hand, he comes off as a complete atheist. And then the other hand, the way he speaks of science and his awe of the wonder of the cosmos, great series, by the way, is almost religious. It gives him some sort of sense of meaning or purpose. And that's where it ties into these ideas of the Force, like in Star Wars, or the sense of oneness that one has at that random moment in time, maybe sitting on the beach, maybe they were doing a psychedelic, maybe they were having a conversation with a friend or someone close to them, and they just sort of had that moment, and you can feel it. I wonder if I can tap into that more often, and that's my hope, because I feel like when I do tap into that, somehow I start thinking more clearly. So it doesn't matter whether you're a drug addict, alcoholic, or not, and you're just keeping yourself open to being a better person. Somehow the action of seeking a spiritual path for you and working that path and taking the steps that you need to take and then getting that moment, it doesn't matter who we are, where we come from, what our beliefs are, we can all experience that sense of oneness and wonder and awe. And you don't need some almighty to say you will be punished if you don't do X, Y, and Z. But you will be rewarded if you do A, B, and C. Okay, so I think we'll leave it there for part one of Energy. Feel free to contact me via email through the website, spiritualbazaar.com. Or you can leave a comment on the Instagram page, and the handle for that is @spiritualbazaar. All right, until next time, let the mystery take you. May the force be with you. Be well.